The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Yusech-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guest today is John Toma. John, welcome to Community Connections. We are delighted that you can join us today and share with our audience the work that you do at Transitions Life Care. Before I ask you any questions, let me introduce you to our audience. John Toma is a graduate of Boston University, where he received a Bachelor of Arts degree in Spanish. He continued studies at Tufts University Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, Nonprofit Institute, and Tufts University School of Continuing Education, concentrating in community economic development and nonprofit management. John joined Hospice of Wake County, now Transitions of Life Care, in 1991, and has served in the capacity of finance manager and chief financial officer. He was appointed chief executive officer in August of 2002. In addition to his role as chief executive officer, John serves on the board of trustees for the Hospice of Wake County Foundation and is very active in promoting quality end-of-life care at the state and national levels. John served on the board of the United Way of Greater Triangle and the North Carolina Association for Home Hospice Care. Nationally, John has served as secretary of the National Hospice and Palliative Board of Directors and chairs of the National Hospice and Palliative Care Governance Committee. He has previously chaired the National Hospice, it's a lot, Palliative Care Quality and Standards Committee, and served on the Membership Committee. John and his wife of 41 years live in Raleigh. They have three adult children and two grandchildren. They also have two Shetland sheep dogs, Shelties. One is a therapy dog in the Transitions Life Care Hospice Home, and the other does agility training. John's hobbies include gardening, vegetable gardening, and cooking. He is a lover of bluegrass music and enjoys the well-known North Carolina bluegrass festivals. John volunteers primarily at his church, where he has served as treasurer, audit and finance committee, and stewardship chair. He wishes he had more time to read books for pleasure. John's personal and professional passion is living life to the fullest in simple and meaningful ways and helping others in their life journey. In his role at Transitions Life Care, he wants to improve the lives of individuals and their families who are struggling with serious and terminal illness, as well as improve healthcare systems to be more equitable, person-centered, and effective at promoting well-being and achieving individuals' goals. John, welcome.
Thank you, Sonia. It is a pleasure to speak with you today.
Okay, so let's start informing our listening public to what hospice is all about. Just comment a little briefly on the word itself, which incorporates palliation to the terminally ill, and how it began in 1979.
Certainly. The word hospice stems from the Latin word hospitium, meaning hospitality, and early on in its history, hospice provided lodging and care for the weary and the dying. Today, it is a philosophy and a model for compassionate, holistic, end-of-life care. The first modern hospice, St. Christopher's Hospice, was founded in London by Dame Cicely Saunders in 1967. The first hospice in the U.S. was Connecticut Hospice, founded in 1974. Hospice of Wake County was founded by Dr. Billy Dunlap and two nurses that worked in the local hospitals. They had heard of Connecticut Hospice, and others in North Carolina were starting to form hospice programs across the state. Dr. Dunlap and our co-founders wanted to start a hospice program in the Triangle. They began meeting in 1978 and started the program in 1979.
Great. Thank you. That's good information. Words are powerful and can have profound effects. Why did Hospice of Wake County change its name to Transitions Life Care, and what effect has it had?
Well, since the beginning in 1979, Hospice of Wake County has been a pioneer in identifying unmet needs for persons with serious illness and terminal illness, and creating programs that meet those needs and fill gaps in service. So that inspired our board and staff early on to create new programs as needed. One is the Community Bereavement Counseling Program that we'll talk about later, and that's for anyone who had experienced a loss of any kind in the community. Later, we added a home health program, a palliative care program, a family care support program, and a special program for children with serious life-threatening illnesses. So as our reputation grew for providing high-quality care, we were called to serve individuals and their families in counties surrounding Wake County, and those included Durham and Chatham County, Johnston County, and all the counties around us. We were called to establish regional offices in those counties. So in a nutshell, we changed the name from Hospice of Wake County to Transitions Life Care in 2014 because we provide multiple programs and serve multiple counties. Many people still think of us as Hospice of Wake County, and we are very proud of that name and of that legacy. So the effect of Transitions Life Care has been very positive and impactful. It's allowed us to expand access to care for individuals and their families struggling with serious illness, not sure what service they need or what services they may qualify for.
Okay. And I like the word transitions because that implies what's happening to someone who needs your services. So end-of-life issues, particularly in the United States, are a most difficult subject for families to address. How can folks begin, and what suggestions do you have to encourage that kind of necessary conversation?
Well, I'm glad that you're addressing this question. It is very important. I do encourage folks to think about their life and vitality and their well-being, and to think about it in the context of the cycle of life, from birth to death, and to embrace their own mortality. Once we embrace our mortality and the mortality of our loved ones, we are inspired to enjoy every day, enjoy every moment, and reflect on what is most important to us, what is important to our family, what is important to our personal legacy on this earth. And it helps start a conversation about our healthcare wishes and goals. And that conversation is a true gift for ourselves and for our loved ones. It is an intimate conversation that can begin with storytelling, the recounting of memories, and it elicits what is important to us, what we value, and how those values direct the type of care we want to receive at end of life, and what our preferences are for treatment. The conversation helps us and our loved ones plan ahead, and the conversation should be recurring over the years as health and situations change. This type of conversation you want to have with someone who is or will be designated as your healthcare power of attorney, or as it's called, your surrogate healthcare decision maker. Everyone, I encourage, should have a legal healthcare power of attorney, someone who can speak for you in the hospital or with a doctor if you cannot speak for yourself. Once you have a healthcare power of attorney, you can go one step further and specify in writing the types of treatments you want or do not want if you could not speak for yourself. And these written forms are called a do not resuscitate form, a living will, the five wishes form, or the medical order for scope of treatment form, also known as the MOST form.
I see. So there are many ways that can this can issue that can be addressed. I'm just wondering, unfortunately, some daddies die young. How do we help our children?
That's a great question. We have a wonderful team of social work counselors and bereavement counselors, family support counselors that are included with the team and included in the plan of care and in the care that's provided to both the patient who may be dying, but also to the family. We always work with the entire family and not just the individual with an illness. And our counselors stay involved after the death of a loved one and continue to provide bereavement support for months and months.
Okay. Well, thank you for enhancing my original question. So now we heard this phrase a number of times that it takes a village. So there's a little village going on in transitions, and that would be the staff. So tell us about the staff and what their positions are and where they're most needed.
Sure. Well, we do serve a wide area, as I mentioned, Wake, Durham, Orange, Granville, Franklin, Johnston, Harnett, and Chatham counties. And we have a staff and volunteers that live in those areas and serve those areas. We have 550 employees and 300 volunteers. And among our employees are the clinical teams. Clinical teams consist of a physician, a nurse practitioner, physician assistants, nurses, nurse aides, social workers, spiritual care counselors, family caregiver support specialists, bereavement counselors, and educators. Many of our staff are certified in hospice and palliative care and attain a higher level of certification. Here on our campus, it's on Trinity Road near the PNC Arena. We also have a 30-bed hospice facility, and that's staffed 24/7, and that is for acute care needs, and it is a wonderful alternative to the hospital if someone needs that 24/7 care provided by a nurse and a physician.
Great answer. Now that we know the campus and we know who's on the staff, tell us now the heart of Transitions Life Care. Its philosophy, its mission, and its vision.
Well, our philosophy is that everyone deserves and has a right to receive high-quality care that is in concordance with their goals, their wishes, and their preferences. And it's also important to us and to our board of directors that everyone is eligible for our services and can receive care, regardless of their income or their insurance or their ability to pay. We also believe in the importance of having a care team approach, and that's sometimes called an interdisciplinary care team or an interprofessional care team. It's a team of professionals and volunteers who care for the whole person and not just treat a disease. And they also care for the entire family unit, for the spouse, for the children, for family caregivers who may be involved in the care in the home. And it's important that we include everyone in the conversation, include everyone in the goals of care discussion, so that we're not just talking with the physician or we're not just talking with the patient, but including the family as well in those goals of care discussions. Mm-hmm. And our mission is to care for individuals and families with compassion, support, and expertise as they navigate the end of life or life-changing illnesses. And our vision is to provide the right care at the right time, providing the best possible experience for patients and families in our community, those who are facing end of life or life-changing illness.
Well, it sounds like you have it pretty much all together for the people who are in need of what hospice and transitions life care provides. It's comforting to know that this is here and that in the philosophy, you believe everyone is entitled to it. So I think for everyone listening, I'll say thank you. So you mentioned that you have two sheepdogs, and one of them is a therapy dog at Transitions. Now, he is part of the team. Is it a he or a she?
He, yes. His name is Jerry Grant, and he's part of the team.
Oh, well.
And he just turned 9 years old.
Well, happy birthday, Carrie.
Yeah. He is trained and certified in pet therapy. He's handled by a trained volunteer who is my wife. But we also have a whole team of trained volunteers and their therapy dog partners that work at Transitions. And they visit patients and families to provide comfort and companionship. So they frequent in the hospice care facility and also visit patients and families in facilities throughout our service area.
Well, that's wonderful. When did he start working there?
He started 4 years ago. He really knows it's his job. It's his work. When he reports to work, he knows the routine. He goes right in and greets everyone.
Well, that's wonderful. Does he live at home with you?
Yes.
Yes, and then he comes to work just like you do.
That's right. And he's wearing his little vest uniform.
Right. With a little fewer responsibilities, I'm sure.
Right.
Okay. So now maybe you can describe what palliative care is, because not everybody knows that word, and that's so important. And maybe you can paint the scene about when hospice first comes to do a home visit for a family?
Yes, thank you. This is a very important question because palliative care is a strange word, and it doesn't really define exactly what it is and what it's about. Palliative care is a much-needed and valuable service, and it provides specialized care and support for individuals and their family that are struggling with a serious illness, yet they may not qualify for hospice care. The palliative care uses the same team approach with a team of a doctor, nurse, social worker, and spiritual care counselor. And that care team focuses on managing pain, treating other burdensome symptoms. They also focus on psychosocial and emotional needs and focus on goals of care, conversations, and decision making, and also help coordinate care with multiple care providers. Many patients on palliative care have multiple chronic conditions and have lots of specialists, heart failure, primary care, lung doctor. And so we just help coordinate the care with multiple providers and help guide and navigate the healthcare system. To qualify for hospice, the patient's physician certifies that the patient has 6 months or less to live. That's the hospice service. But palliative care does not have that restriction. It does not have that terminal prognosis requirement. And palliative care can and should be provided earlier in a disease process. So a palliative home visit starts with a visit to the home by a certified nurse or a nurse practitioner. And they are there to assess patient physically and psychological needs, and to listen to the patient and listen to the family and family caregiver to assess what the needs are and to co-create a plan of care based on those personal goals. Following the initial assessment, we can involve other members of the team, which would include a social worker, a spiritual care counselor, and a volunteer.
I see. Well, John, you mentioned a very, very important word. The word is listen. I once read that the best physician, diagnostician is a person who listens. Because when you engage the patient, things that you might not know come out because you've developed rapport and the patient feels comfortable enough to tell you other things that are not on a list of questions. So listening is absolutely important, and I'm so glad to hear that the people that go out to the homes are good listeners.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. All right, now we come to something that's enveloped all of us, and it's COVID, the pandemic. What challenges did transition staff and families face, and how were they met during these last almost 2 years?
Yeah, the pandemic has been very disruptive for all of us. Early on in the pandemic, we struggled just to get personal protective equipment or PPE for our staff and for our families that needed it. And there were severe supply shortages. Many of our staff and families became infected or had to be quarantined because of COVID. Also, the demand for in-home services increased dramatically because of increased illnesses in the community, but also there was a desire to stay out of the hospital, and folks preferred to have care delivered to their home. So we quickly shifted to providing telehealth in addition to in-person visits, and we have the telehealth equipment for virtual visits as well as virtual monitoring. And our office staff also quickly shifted to be able to telework from home. But overall, it's been very stressful because of the extra work and burdens of a pandemic emergency management plan. Had a lot of anxiety, stress, and burnout among our staff and family caregivers. But fortunately, we're in a better place. The spread of the disease is less now. We have the PPE we need, and we have mastered the use of telehealth and can use that as an important tool going forward.
So were people who were, in quotes, I'm saying, dying of COVID, did they actually only die in the hospital, or did any of those patients come to hospice? I know that
they were able to. Yes, they were able to go home, die at home with hospice or in our hospice facility on campus.
Oh, they were. Okay. Because if they were in the hospital during the height of the pandemic, families were not allowed to visit. There were people dying alone. And that
seems right.
So sad.
It was very sad, and it also occurred in the nursing homes and assisted living facilities that we had patients in. They were not allowing visitors in and even restricted the number of staff that we could bring in, but we were still able to serve them, but were limited in the number of staff we could bring in.
We've gone through what happens at transitions, and then, unfortunately, someone does die. What does transitions do, or what is available for a surviving widow or widower?
Transitions Grief Care has several programs that we offer throughout the year. We have a team of bereavement specialists and counselors that specialize in adult grief, but also in grief among children and teenagers. So we have both a combination of individual counseling available that can be provided here in our office on Trinity Road or in one of our regional offices. We can schedule one-on-one counseling visits. But we also, on our website, in the calendar of events, offer grief support groups for all ages throughout the year. So we'll have an adult group meet, and we'll have a child group meet or a teen group do special activities. So we have support groups that are available different times of year. And unfortunately, because of COVID, those are all virtual now, but we look forward to doing those in person very soon. But we do have actually good attendance at the virtual support groups that we provide.
Yeah, it seems everything is virtual when the topic is so tender and so emotional. It would seem that the in-person group where you can get a hug instead of a virtual hug would be so effective for people who are mourning. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. In-person is preferred. The virtual groups have been effective, though. We have received good feedback.
Yeah. I have heard you mention various parts of the staff. I have not heard the word psychologist. I heard counselors and other support staff. Do you have a psychologist on staff as well?
That's a great question. All of our social work counselors are licensed clinical counselors, but they're not licensed psychologists. But we do work very closely with psychologists in the community that we can refer to and do refer individuals to psychologists in cases of very complicated grief and complex grief that's combined with other types of emotional stresses.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, too. All right. So I have a word to say to you, and I would like to hear what that word imparts to you. I've had many, many guests on this show, and many of them are also CEOs, as you are. And to be up at that level, the word that I'm thinking of is passion. How does that make you feel when you hear the word passion?
Well, I've never been asked that question before, Sadia, but for me, passion is an inner feeling. It's an inner drive that compels me to act, to do something or to say something. Sense of self-affirmation, and it also helps me connect, creates a strong connection with others, particularly others that share the same passion. So passion connects me to a calling or life purpose, and I have really found my calling here at Transitions Life Care.
Well, it would seem so to me because of the way you describe everything that goes on at hospice, and what you say about your role, wanting to improve the lives of individuals and their families who are struggling with terminal illnesses and serious illnesses, and improve the healthcare system. That, to me, sounds like your passion. And I think that you must be doing a marvelous job of it. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I have great support from fellow team members, and also from community members like yourself and others who help us in this journey and help get the message out and help support the organization.
So now, please tell us the phone number and the website.
Yes, our phone number is 919-828-0890. That's 919-828-0890, and you can call and ask to speak to our access department, and our access staff are there ready to listen to your situation and your needs and help connect you to services. Information is available on our website, transitionslifecare.org. It's spelled out all as one word, transitionslifecare, then .org. And on the website, we have a caregiver support page that also has podcasts from our WPTF Aging Matters radio show, and there are links to podcasts on all the topics that we've discussed today. And
fabulous.
Very much look forward to putting this podcast on our website. Thank
well,
you.
Well, wonderful. John, you've been a most wonderful and charming, informative guest. Thank you for being with us. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.